GE Appliances and Air and Water Solutions is dedicated to serving the unique needs of the plumbing, heating, and ventilation and air conditioning industry. GE has launched a robust product portfolio that includes water heaters, water filtration, commercial HVAC, ductless, and ducted HVAC. The GE team is focused on putting the pros at the center of our business by delivering an iconic, trusted brand that is easy to sell, an innovation that makes installation easier, and dedicated to support that makes doing business simpler. At GE, we call this being pro-centric. To learn more and request information about GE, go to GEAppliancesAirAndWater.com. That's GEAppliancesAirAndWater.com.
Kevin Walker is driven by the search for interesting conversations with people across small business, family, sports, and music. He's an authority in audio and video production with 35 plus years of radio, photography, podcast, and video experience. Welcome, Kevin.
Good morning. Mark Madison here on Books and People. Today, I'm excited about our guest this morning, Kevin Walker. Kevin, are you in Iowa?
I am.
What's the temperature?
Actually, it's a little warm today. It's 45 right now, so it's seasonal. It says 52 for the high, so it could be short weather before the end of the day.
You know, 70% of all conversations begin with weather.
Yeah.
So we met in Davenport, Iowa.
We did, at an event you were speaking at, yeah.
And what were you doing there?
Well, running audio, doing lighting, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Trying to make the speaker sound good and make sure everything worked right.
Did the speaker sound good?
Excellent.
That was really fun. You're really good.
It was fun too. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I enjoyed it. It's one of those events where I know nothing about HVAC and all those things that the event was about, but every year they bring speakers in. And I think I mentioned this to you afterwards when you gave me a copy of your book. I said, some years I just gloss over and I don't really pay any attention, but I really, when you were done speaking, I'm like, oh, I wish he had more time. I'd like to listen to him some more.
Oh, that's nice. I appreciate that. Yeah. I've been doing this a while, so it's really, really fun for me. So you grew up in Bettendorf, or is that where you live now?
I live there now. I grew up in Dubuque, Iowa, up about an hour and a half away up the Mississippi River. Have lived in Iowa my whole life.
What was your childhood like? What did you love to do when you were a kid?
I loved to play baseball. I loved to play basketball. I loved to hang out with my grandparents and my family. I grew up in a household where my mom was an alcoholic. And there, from when I got in to be a teenager, I think in some ways I had to be way more adult than as the oldest child. I had to see things or handle things that maybe my younger brother and sister didn't. But I still enjoyed it. I still enjoyed my childhood. I loved sports. I loved reading. I loved school. But I also grew up around a situation that I thought was normal. I didn't know any better. I didn't realize that everyone's mom wasn't an alcoholic. And, you know, I'd come home from the football game at 10:30 on a Friday night. My dad would be in bed and my mom would be passed out watching Johnny Carson.
Wow.
So I didn't really know any better until I got older and realized that that wasn't the most normal atmosphere.
Right. Yeah, I had the same situation, except it was my father, not my mother.
Okay.
And she issued an ultimatum one day. He came home from a bender, and there was masking tape down the center of the living room. And he said, "What's that?" He said, "Well, the only asset we have is this house, and since you won't stop drinking, I'm going to sell it and divorce you." And my dad stopped drinking the next day.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like, so I remember those days, those dark days and those sad days. Yeah. What did your dad do for a living? What'd your mom do?
My dad worked at John Deere. He was an engineer at John Deere. My mom mostly raised the kids. And then as I got a little older, she worked some part-time jobs at the mall. She worked at a bank here or there, but a lot of jobs. you can't drink at night and come in hungover. So when I got into high school, by then she had pretty much stopped working, and Dad made enough money for her not to work. But I think, you know, early on she worked because she wanted to. But yeah, he worked at John Deere. He and I were just having a conversation a couple of days ago. I'll be 55 this week, and my dad retired from John Deere at 57. And because he'd been there since he was like 20 years old, and they, one of those early retirements, and then they hired him back immediately to be a contractor, and he worked for him for another 10 or 12 years.
Wow.
But I thought 57, like, I've got so many things I want to accomplish as an entrepreneur.
Right.
And I can't, and quite frankly, I'm like, there's no way I could survive if I retired at 57. But I remember when he retired, I was out of college, and I thought, man, Dad's lived a long life. He's done well for himself. And here I am almost that age. And I'm like, I feel like I'm just getting started in right. so many, or starting over, learning from my mistakes, or navigating in a different path. But that was a, you know, at a time when you would work for one company for 35 years and retire with a gold watch.
It was a different time. Yeah.
Totally, totally different time. Yeah.
Yeah. That generation, that was the norm. What was your mm-hmm. very first job?
My first job, I worked as a stock boy at Kmart. and I was like a checker cashier and unloaded trucks and just whatever little job I would do for, you know, $4 an hour, which at the time I thought was, I was rich. And then work Sundays. They would pay overtime, like time and a half, if you worked on Sunday, and the store was only open for like 7 hours on Sunday.
That's so I'd go to church. $6 an hour.
Yeah. I'd go to church early. And then after mass, I'd go work, and I'd work all day. And then all day long, I would be like, boy, I made $42 today. And I thought, you know, again, this is 1986, and I thought I was rich, but I loved that job. I did that all the way until like my sophomore year of college. I worked during the summers there, and until I got into radio, and then started working in radio during the summer overnight, making even less money.
How did you get into radio?
Always wanted to do it. All I ever wanted to do as a kid was be, when I realized I wasn't any good at sports, I wanted to be in radio, and I wanted to be a photographer. And so I went to school, you know, communications, did all that kind of stuff. And one of the local radio stations in Dubuque had an overnight, this is back when 24/7 radio stations were live. And I got a job doing overnights, midnight to 6 a.m. And then I stuck around and helped produce the morning show for free half the time, and would roll home about 8 o'clock and go to bed and get up and do whatever, and then go to the radio station. I did that whole summer. And then that station hired me a year and a half later when I graduated from college. And it's all I ever wanted to do at that point.
Right. My dream job when I was in high school was to be a disc jockey. That didn't materialize, but all these years later, what is this but a radio program on a computer?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's the new, it's just another form of broadcasting. And I love podcasting too. It's just, it's a maybe a more in-depth, more one-on-one thing, but it's really no different than doing radio. It's just a different way to do it.
Right. So you got the Catholic Dad Show.
Yep.
Tell us about that.
Well, I have been a lifelong Catholic, and I find there are very few podcasts towards Catholics or dads or this or that. And I've helped produce a podcast and co-hosted a podcast called Dude to Dad, which is a friend of mine, is a news anchor here in the Quad Cities. He wanted to do a podcast about being a dad, like all the things you like when you're a dude and you're 19 and all you care about is yourself. And then you meet the girl, you get married, you have a baby, and suddenly your whole life changes. So as we hosted that, I thought, you know, I've always wanted to do something that was maybe faith related. And I thought, yeah, there's, you know, the Bishop Barons of the world, and there's the other, you know, even the non-Catholic podcasts, the Joel Olsteins and things like that. I didn't find anything that was related specifically to fatherhood. So I thought, well, I'm going to branch out and do something that is faith related, and then also has some aspects of fatherhood and leadership, you know, kind of the things that I'm interested in, dads, leadership, faith, you know, pursuit of learning. And I'm a huge fan of always being curious, always learning. right. trying to move forward, always trying to do something new. That podcast has been on the books. I'm that guy because I'm entrepreneurial and I have multiple businesses that all kind of together make enough money that my wife says you don't need to get a real job. And it's all because all the radio stuff I do now is all contractor based, because it's all a lot of it is, you know, is technology wise. You can be on the air six states away from the studio in Bettendorf, Iowa. So none of it's really live anymore. So I have always kind of wanted to branch out and, you know, launch it. This podcast has been in the works or coming soon for 2 years now. And it's funny, after, you know, I watched you speak and started reading a little bit about Freedom from Fear, I realized it wasn't that so much that I was afraid to do it. It's that I'm too busy doing the things that pay the bills that I do like, right, and that I do enjoy. But all I ever do is like, oh, my ambitions are this. I'd like to launch these podcasts. The domains have been registered for 2 years. The websites are ready, but not launched. So this spring, I finally forced myself. And after watching you speak, I was like, man, it's not that I'm afraid of it. It's just, I'm not placing time. It's not something that I'm putting enough emphasis on. So I'm going to launch these. I'm going to launch that and launch the other podcast I'm looking at. And so they are slated to launch in April, because I've been putting them off forever. And I realize I'm not afraid of it. I'm just kind of like, I got to stop, you know, worrying about DJing weddings on the weekend to pay the bills and worry about the things that I really want to do and then go monetize the podcast. So in a way, just watching your energy and listening to you speak and reading your book a little bit, I'm like, dude, I can't be on his podcast and then not take some positive steps forward. It was almost like a little kick in the rear to say, you've been talking about this. And when I told my business coach, she's like, well, whatever he said that day must have gotten you to do it, because I've been trying to get you to do it for a year now. So it's like, I'm finally like, hey, let's move forward with something I really want to do. And it doesn't have to be monetized. You do it because you want to do it and you feel you have something to contribute.
But you can monetize it. And, you know, yeah, what I did was I made a list of 10 manufacturers. And the very first one I reached out to, it was an old friend of mine, Andy Armstrong, who was there at Republic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was at a different company at the time. And I said, hey, how do you feel about sponsoring a podcast? And he said, send me an invoice. I mean, I made a list of 10 and I started with the first one and that was it. I mean, so there are people out there that'll sponsor your podcast. You just have to make a list and go after them. I mean, if I can do it, you can do it, right? So
sure, yeah.
So who are your mentors coming up in radio?
My very first boss, his name is Mike Callahan. He hired me to do the overnights. He's since passed away from lung cancer, but he was just that guy. He was in my wedding. Great guy. Taught me a lot of things. Also taught me to not take myself so seriously. You know, you go have a beer on a Saturday and it was, you know, he would always say, Kevin, it's just radio. We enjoy it and it's fun, but you can't take it too seriously. It's just radio. We're not in Chicago. Yeah. We're not in Chicago. We're not going to live and die by the next set of ratings. It is what it is. So Mike was always someone I really looked up to. And here in the Quad Cities, I always liked Spike Odell. I used to listen to Spike when I was in high school. Spike ended up at WGN in Chicago, probably the most famous morning guy in the Quad Cities, and had a long, long career in Chicago. Always thought he was really someone to emulate. And
is he still around?
He's retired now. I believe he lives in Tennessee. I think.
Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Write him a letter.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Tell him, here's 5 or 10 things I got from you, and I just wanted to say thanks for changing my life. You won't believe the impact it'll have.
Yeah.
And no one does it. Here's when we do it. After someone dies, and we say those things at their funeral.
Mm-hmm.
But why are we waiting? We need to tell them while they're still alive. I had coffee with my basketball coach for my sophomore year. He's 84 in Mesa, Arizona last year. And I wrote him that letter, and I flunked high school English and he was an English teacher. So he knew, he knew, but it was one of those things that had a profound effect on both of our lives. And he was so grateful, you know? And again, we only wait until someone's gone to say those things. That's really a shame.
Yep.
So,
that
in
makes
addition
sense.
to mentors, what books had an impact on you?
I have always been a big Tony Robbins fan, so I've read seems like every Tony Robbins book. I mean, a lot of them I've had to reread two or three times because I didn't absorb it maybe well enough the first time or two. So a lot of times I would pay more attention to, you know, oh, I need to read. You know, sometimes when you read something the second or third time, you're like, oh, that makes sense. I get that now.
Yeah. How come I didn't see that the first time? Yeah.
Yeah. The second, third time, I'm like, wait a minute, that makes sense. Another book, it's funny, when I was younger, I used to read a lot of, you know, Hardy Boys and other things. And as I got older into college, and then later, I started to read magazines. I started to have that short attention span. And then you get into, you know, as an adult now, my kids read, my wife is a librarian at a middle school. It is all I've gotten better at it as our daughter is now in middle school, or in she's in fourth grade. So we have to read 20 minutes a day and we all do that. So I probably have spent more time in the last 3 or 4 years reacquainting myself with books. And one of the books that I think I've had the most success with is, I'm a huge Brendan Burchard fan, High Performance Habits. Just the ability to be a little more critical about my habits and about intentionality and right. about purpose and about why I'm doing it. I used to do things, I think, you know, you probably would understand this. People do things when they're younger for themselves, or they think I success and money. And I'm learning as I get older that really some of those really high performance habits revolve around how you take care of others, what you do for somebody else, what right. can you do for yourself. But as you're doing that often now, I get more things out of doing something for somebody else than I do in pacifying my own needs. So I've always been a big fan of Tony, but Brendan Burchard has become someone. I've done a lot of coaching in his program, and it just fits for me. All his books fit, but High Performance Habits have always been that's kind of like, wow, I can read that and I feel like that fits me. Like, yes, this applies to my life.
He's a smart guy. He's a good writer and he's a fine speaker.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah.
So one of the things I was struck by when I met you was your passion and your enthusiasm. What three words best describe you?
Curious. Passion. I do feel like I have a passion for life. And I'm curious about everything. And I would hope that people that I know would say that I'm loyal. That when you're important to me, you're important to me. And so I think those three fit well together.
What would be a perfect day for you?
A perfect day for me is to, I'd probably get up in the morning, have some breakfast with the girls before they go to school. Get the emails and things out of the way right away. So then I can concentrate on, we have a 3-year-old Malchie dog, little 15-pound dog. And he is like my shadow. Our youngest wanted him, had to have him. He's my dog now. He sleeps with us. I get more joy out of the unconditional love from that dog. So I'd spend an hour with him just sitting on my lap as I'm watching some TV or reading a book. That would be great. Then I would probably either have lunch with family, like a cousin or someone, or a business associate, or maybe an employee of mine. And in the afternoon, quite frankly, a perfect day, I'd take a nap. I'd take a half an hour nap. I get up really early. And a lot of times, you know, in the early afternoon, I'm like, wow, I've been up since 5:30. You know, I have that working out of the house kind of thing. A lot of times I'll take a nap and then I'm refreshed and then I go again. You know, and in a perfect world, I'd be at Wrigley Field watching the Cubs win in the afternoon.
I take a nap every day when I'm not traveling.
Yeah. It works.
It works. Winston Churchill used to go back into bed, you know, and get, you know, in his nightgown and sleep for a couple hours and then get up and work until 3 a.m. So he basically had two 8-hour yep. shifts in between was a nap. And it's honestly, it's one of the reasons I'm self-employed. You know, none of my bosses ever liked the fact that I was taking naps. It got me in trouble a little bit. So I thought, well, maybe if I'm self-employed, I can take a nap whenever I want to.
Well, in post-COVID, I'm finding, you know, I'm not spending nearly as much time in an office that's not in my house. If I'm by myself during the day, yeah. And the dog's like, sure, I'll lay down on the couch with you. I'm like, yep, I can. You're right. I can work later. I know the nights that the girls are at dance or that there are certain nights a week that I know I'm alone at 6:30 at night. Well, I'll take a nap those days because then I can get back into work at 6:30 or 7 o'clock. I get a lot. Sometimes I get more done at 7 o'clock at night than I do at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I've learned that that's okay. Taking a nap at 1 o'clock, 2 or 3 days a week, if it refreshes you and kind of rejuvenates you. I used to feel lazy doing it. Now I'm like, I look forward to it and it refreshes me.
Yeah, it's rejuvenating. When was the last time you did something for the first time?
Ooh, great question. Something for the first time. Wow. That I'm such a creature of habit. I'm not really good at doing things out of my comfort zone. The last time I did something the first time. Wow. 3.5-4 years ago. I suckered into it, but I got asked to do the some kind of dance thing. It was not the dancing with the local Dancing with the Stars thing, but I got asked to do this thing. My daughter dances at my sister-in-law. My sister-in-law's the family owns this dance studio. And I got asked to do some dance stuff, like that dad's, it's like a dad thing. And I had never done that before. And I was super hesitant. But in the end it was fun. It was awful, but I enjoyed it and the girls all loved it. And so, yeah, that's probably the last time that I can physically remember doing something that I'd never done before. Cause I've never been a big dancer. I've never taken any formalized dance lessons, but that was one of those opportunities where I was asked to do it. And I was like, cause I'm not a mountain climber or a skier, you know, I still like to be outside and do my thing, but that's probably the last time that I can remember vividly doing something that I'd never done before, because I like to do things I like to do, and I'm not necessarily good at being like, I should try painting today because I know I'm not a painter, but
right.
Yeah, that comes to mind. Yeah.
My youngest son asked me a question the other day. He said, if everyone you met was in one room, who would be the first person you would want to talk to?
Wow. That's a great question. It's funny now because she passed away in 1998. I think I'd want to talk to my dad's mom, my grandma. We were exceedingly close. I think if everyone, yeah, I mean, because it's easy to say, oh, if anyone who ever lived was in that room, you might say I'd meet Jesus Christ or George Washington or whatever. But if it's people that I know,
right,
man, my grandma Marie, she was super cool. I mean, we used to sit and watch MTV together and other stuff. So, I mean, I think if I had an opportunity to talk to her again, she'd probably be the first person that I'd beeline for in that room.
You'd probably want to interview her too and ask her what it was like when she was young and get some.
Yeah. Very little of that went on when I was in high school or college. It's funny now, I think, whoa, I wish I had been more inquisitive or had asked, because at that time I wanted to be the radio guy playing the music and being the program director. Now I want to be the guy who asks the questions. I love what you're doing. It's like, to me, conversation. I love having conversations with people, whether I know them or not. My dad is 81 and I've started to do some of that where he's very uncomfortable. We don't need to do that. We're going to sit down and do it on video. Like, dad, let me ask you some questions. I've got some prompts. I've got some questions, because once you're gone, I can't ever ask them. I think I know the answers, but I might not. And the youngest granddaughter or grandson might want to know these someday. And it took a little while to push him because he loves to talk, but he doesn't like to be put on the spot or interviewed per se. But yeah, it is a situation where I wish things I would ask now, you're right. 30 years ago, I'd ask my grandma if you want to go to McDonald's and get some lunch after I cut your grass and tell me about, you know, whatever. But today I would be like, what was it like when you married grandpa? Or what was it like to go through the depression? Or what was it like during World War II when dad was born? I didn't think to ask her any of those questions when I was 18 years old.
I asked my dad one day, I said, how did you and mom meet? Because he was in England. He was stationed at Ruislip Field in the Air Force. And he said, I was playing a softball game, which was odd because he was a professional baseball player, a pitcher for 2 years in Cleveland. And he said, I was catching. And he said, I looked through the mask and I saw this pair of legs attached to a beautiful redhead. And so when the inning was over, I asked my buddy in the dugout, who's the girl with the red hair? He said, oh, that's Jean. That's my my girlfriend's best friend. You want to meet her? And my dad said, yeah. So the first time he met his future in-laws, it was a house full of widows. My grandmother and aunt were both widows from World War II. And so they were on rations. And so there was a chunk of cheese in the center of the table about the size of a stick of butter, and they were trying to impress him. But that was the family's ration of cheese for a week. So wow. I said, Bob, would you like some cheese? And he said, yeah, great, thanks. And he grabs the whole thing and puts it between a piece of bread and starts gnawing on it like a bone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the family was aghast. And evidently, my great-grandmother, Nana Brooklyn, said, that bloody Yank's not welcome in this house anymore. And when he found out, you know, what he'd done, his faux pas, he went to Germany the next weekend to play a basketball tournament. And he came back with a giant round of cheese. Now, every time he told it, the cheese got bigger. The last time he told it, there was a wheelbarrow involved in the story. But regardless, he puts this giant chunk of cheese on the table and said, I hope this makes up for the last time I was here.
And wow.
He was in, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
He could have a third day. Right. So
it's good. Yeah. Yeah. Great story.
And those are the kind of stories you just go, I never knew that. You know, that's why.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I agree. And those are the stories that are interesting. You know, growing up in Dubuque, Iowa, Mississippi River flows right through there. And like there were two major floods when my dad was a kid. Like 1965 was the major one, 27 feet or whatever, flooded all of downtown. And I was always a history buff, so I always remember looking at pictures and things like that.
Yeah.
And I do remember one of the few things I ever did ask him when I was a kid, you know, tell me, what was it like when you lived downtown and everything flooded? And he would tell me about it and talk about this and that and going places in boats and grandpa going to work in a boat because he couldn't get there by car. And it didn't dawn on me at the time, like, oh, these are the kind of things that are interesting. And people, I find that, I mean, great, you have to ask good questions. But if you just, and I don't remember if you said something to this effect when you were speaking in Iowa that day, something about ask a question and then just shut up. Like, let somebody talk. Let somebody give their story. Don't
the listening
don't
game.
Tell, yeah. Like, yeah. Let them tell their story because they're going to tell the story way better than you're going to be able to, like, ask them more questions or step on them. And I think at the time when he told me those things, it never dawned on me that, like, oh, these are the kind of questions you want to ask people because you're learning something about, and being a big history buff, I still love history and, you know, whatever it was. I mean, I also wanted to be an astronaut when I grew up. And I also quickly realized I couldn't do math or science well enough to ever get hired by NASA. That doesn't mean I still don't own a telescope today and, like, look at the moon, but there's a difference between looking at the moon and a telescope and being smart enough to go there for NASA. So, I mean, but you're right, asking questions and then being able to listen and knowing what to listen for and then being able to ask follow-up questions to me is like the art of conversation. Like, what can you learn from somebody by just listening to them?
Right. Yeah, it's something I had to really work on for a long time. And I finally got good at it and it changed everything for me. So some rapid fire questions. You ready? These are sure. Fun questions. On an airplane, window or aisle?
Window.
Okay. Would you rather lose your keys or your phone?
Keys.
Okay. I had my phone stolen in England. I know that's a good decision. Yeah. Do you sing in the shower or cry at movies?
Sing in the shower.
Favorite sandwich?
Ham and cheese, probably.
Ham and cheese. Interesting. Yeah. Apples or oranges?
Oranges.
Interesting. Almost everyone says apples. That's cool.
Apple pie I love, but if I have to eat them, yeah. But if it's just straight up, I like oranges.
Right. Well, my first year of being married, my wife said, what do you want for your birthday? meals and dessert and all that. And I said, apple pie. And she goes, okay, I'll make an apple pie. You want ice cream? I said, yeah, chocolate. And she said, chocolate? Nobody puts chocolate in apple pie. I said, whose birthday is this?
Yeah.
I'll get vanilla for everyone else. I said, I don't care about everyone else. It's my birthday. Yeah, so she still makes two apple pies on my birthday, and there's always chocolate and vanilla. So, and Bob's your uncle. There you go. When do you
Sure.
feel most about, when do you feel most like yourself? What specific activities?
When I am, I think when I'm w walking the dog with my youngest daughter, because she's at that age now where I feel like I'm myself because I can listen to her. We have conversations. I also feel, because faith is important to me, I feel like I'm myself most when I'm at mass sometimes. And I love sports, love college sports. I feel like myself when I'm at an Iowa Hawkeye game or a Cubs game, or if I'm at Lambeau watching the Packers. So, because I love sports. Not good at it, but I love them.
Are you a big
It's
fan of
my
Caitlin Clark?
huge fan of Caitlin Clark, to the point where one of the radio stations I freelance for in Iowa is an affiliate and carries both men's and women's basketball, and we have a digital website. I went to the point of getting a press credential so I could photograph games, and now I photograph every home game for this digital newspaper slash website, and they pay me for it, but I would do it for free because I'm courtside. And I mean, I used to be a sports photographer the Quad City Times for a very short time, back when newspapers would have stringers where you could shoot on spec and they would have you shoot games before
Right.
they would have two employees instead of 16 photographers. So yeah, I mean, I'll get to photograph Caitlin Clark on the Hawkeyes again here in a couple days and a couple more times this season. I love doing that. And luckily I'm above average at it, so I can actually get a few good shots here and there. But to watch her interact with 6, 7, 8-year-old kids, and I'm
Yes.
7 feet away because I'm courtside, her impact on the game above and beyond basketball, her impact on little girls, big girls, teenage
Yes.
girls, moms, it's amazing to see. And to see it, when you see it on TV, it's one thing, but when you can watch it from the baseline or heading back,
Courtside, baby.
it really is amazing. It really is.
She has changed the game, and like you said, she's inspiring millions of little girls to want to be Caitlin Clark. And she's about ready to break the scoring record,
Yes. Yeah.
which is held by a local girl here at the University of Washington who's playing in the WNBA now.
Yeah,
So,
she's phenomenal. It's amazing to see. It took me a couple years because, again, like being a huge basketball fan, I never really paid much attention to women's basketball. When she was a sophomore, I started to see, and it really didn't come into play till last year when they started their run in the middle of the season. I'm like, wow, I wish I had paid more attention to this 2 or 3 years ago, because watching just it's it, she. I mean, there's stories amongst the press people there that, like, she practices with the men, the Iowa men, and she's as good as they are. I mean,
yeah.
she can out, they can't stop her either. It's crazy.
Well, and the Seattle Storm, I think, has the first pick. So I'm praying that we get her
There you
in the
go.
city. That would change everything. It'd be like drafting Breanna Stewart and Sue Bird all over again.
Yeah,
Except
exactly.
I mean, she's like the Larry Bird and Steph Curry of women's basketball. I mean,
Yeah, I.
I've never seen
Yeah.
anybody come down and pull up and shoot a 39 footer. And
Yeah.
not think twice about it. The last time I remember that was Pistol Pete Maravich when I was like 11 years old.
I wouldn't be surprised if eventually she gets to the point where she may break his record as far as total points in men or women. I think she's within striking distance to get Pistol Pete's total. And I don't really remember him. I remember him in the pros when I was a kid, but I don't remember him at LSU. But it's like, you see the videos and you watch it, and it's just like that scrawny guy with the saggy socks and, the tight shorts. And man, it's just, yeah, crazy.
I watched it back when I was a kid. They had Game of the Week. There was one game on TV on ABC. And
Yeah.
so I watched Pistol Pete score 68 points. And he had
Wow.
like 15 assists and like 12 rebounds and then like six steals. I never saw anything like it. He came down and pulled up and shot a 40-footer. And it wasn't like there was no time left on the clock. It was like in the middle of the game. And the announcer said, I'll never forget this. He said, you know why he did that, Joe? And Joe said, I have no idea. He said, because he can. Yeah. And it was nothing but net. Nothing but net. Oh, my gosh. We could talk about basketball all day, I'm sure. In closing, what advice would you offer someone who aspires to get into media?
Work hard. Be confident. Always be willing to put out the extra effort and believe in yourself. You're going to fail a lot. You're going to succeed a lot. But always know what you want to achieve, know how you want to do it. And while you're doing it, help somebody else be successful. And that will in turn help you be more successful. I've learned that the more people you can help, I know it sounds like the Zig Ziglar line, but it's true. Yeah. If you can mentor somebody or learn with somebody or, you know, help somebody get better in your radio station, your newspaper, your TV, your podcast, whatever, doing that is never going to hurt you. It's always going to come back and help you, you know? So yeah. And believe in yourself and don't let failure become who you are. We all fail. Right. So embrace it and move on and be tougher for it. You know, let it strengthen you.
I think Zig was quoting Teddy Roosevelt when he said, it really is true. You have everything you want. I mean, everything you want. If you just help enough other people get what they want first. That was Zig. I only saw him speak once, but it was life-changing. And I bought his audio programs and I read his books. And Zig was one of my heroes. And it turned out he was good friends with my publisher, Charlie Jones. So, I guess the last time he presented, he was in a wheelchair and his daughter pushed him out. And then the audience just asked him questions. And then he would whisper to his daughter and she would answer.
Wow.
And he was like,
I saw him speak one time and it was maybe 15 years ago. Yeah. It was like a traveling Rudy Giuliani was speaking. It was one of these come to the arena and there'd be like seven or eight speakers.
Right.
And he was just so soft-spoken and so intelligent. And so I can't imagine, like, if he came to my house and wanted to sell me some utensils that I already had six copies of, I'd probably buy three. I mean, he was so disarming yet so intelligent and so concerned about the other person. You're right. It was amazing to watch him speak. And that was probably not even at the height of his career. So I can't even imagine what it would have been like in his prime and
pastor. I mean, he was very spiritual, but it was secular. Yep. And he was extraordinary. Closing thoughts. We got a couple minutes.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to sit and talk. I mean, it's interesting. Like I said, I love the art of conversation and I knew when we talked that day and you said, I'll have to have you on the podcast. I thought, oh, cool. I'll get to talk to him some more. I'll get to have a conversation with him. I just, the older I get and the more I realize that nothing is, I mean, I have people now that were in my college class who are dying of cancer or people who are getting Alzheimer's. I just don't take anything for granted every day. Yeah. Not that life wasn't precious when I was 30 or 25. You think you recognize how precious it is. I am very blessed. Am I the most successful guy ever? Nope. Have I made more mistakes than I've ever had successes? Yep. But I've learned from them and I love life. And every day I get up and I'm like, I can't wait to get up and go do whatever, whether it's helping someone, helping myself, helping my family. I love doing things that I love. I love helping other people. And I love talking to people like you that share the same kind of philosophy and that want to help other people. Yeah. Right. Can you make money with it by being good at something? Absolutely. But I would be willing to bet maybe in the top one or two of the reasons you do what you do, it isn't necessarily financial. Yes, that's a component of it. But at the end of the day, you're helping people and you're doing something that's good. So for me, I just like to always be moving forward and not be conformed to mistakes that I've made or not be, you know, I want to be known for my generosity and for my kindness and that I care about other people than about how many points I scored in a basketball game or what my financial statement said at the end of the year. Those things are important, but I've learned they're way less important than the other things. And to me,
Kevin, We are out of time, my friend.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much. And just remember, if you do what you love, you never work another day in your life. Make it a great day.
You too. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Kevin.
GE Appliances and Air and Water Solutions is dedicated to serving the unique needs of the plumbing, heating, and ventilation and air conditioning industry. GE has launched a robust product portfolio that includes water heaters, water filtration, commercial HVAC, ductless and ducted HVAC. The GE team is focused on putting the pros at the center of our business by delivering an iconic, trusted brand that is easy to sell, an innovation that makes installation easier, and dedicated to support that makes doing business simpler. At GE, we call this being pro-centric. To learn more and request information about GE, go to GEApplianceAirAndWater.com. That's GEApplianceAirAndWater.com. Thank you for listening. If I struck a chord, inspire you to action, or piqued your curiosity, let me know. Call or text me at 206-697-0454, or send me an email at mark@sparkingsuccess.net. Should you wish to hire me to speak to your organization or association, or order one of my books, simply go to my website, www.sparkingsuccess.net. And remember, make it a great day, unless you have other plans.